You are now listening to this week's Not So Famous Sports Reporters podcast with your hosts, Austin Klein and Nicholas Trevor. That is right. We are back in business. Today is Sunday, November 22nd, the long-awaited return of your not-so-famous sports reporters. I'm your host, Austin Klein. Alongside me today, I have Nicholas Jarvinen. On today's show, we will be talking about the NFL, as we have just reached the halfway point in their regular season, as well as the MLB offseason, and towards the end of the show, we will be giving you our predictions for the college football playoff. You know, the 14 playoff becomes interesting now as we have a lot of one-loss teams in college football, but without further ado, let's get started. All right, so as promised, we're going to speak a little bit about the NFL today. Just reached the halfway point of the season last week, was it? I believe so. We still have two.
Depends on like the bye weeks, but yeah.
Well, we still have two undefeated teams in the NFL. The Patriots right now sit at 9-0, and with the victory by the Panthers today, they are now 10-0. Nick, which of those two teams do you think will be the first to lose?
Oh, geez, I don't know. Putting me on the spot here, I'm going to have to look at the schedule. But I can tell you that they're both really good teams. And I definitely think the Panthers have the NFC on lockdown because there's just not like another great team in the NFC right now. I think like the second seed is going to be Minnesota if they win today. They're playing Green Bay as we record this. So, I mean, right now, like, yeah, it'd be Arizona or Minnesota. Arizona is 7-2. But Carolina, looking at their schedule, I mean, they're playing the Cowboys next week, which should be a win. I think they can beat the Saints. I think they can beat the Falcons. The Giants, that might be a tough game. And they play the Falcons twice, but one of them's on the road. I just think one of their last two games will probably be a loss for the Panthers because I don't think they're going to go undefeated. It'd be pretty hard. But they're playing the Bucks last week, too. And I think the Bucks are going to get really hot. I think they're a really talented team. So we'll have to see about them. The Patriots, they play later tonight, I think. They're playing the Bills tonight. Honestly, they might lose that game. But the Broncos don't have Peyton Manning. The Eagles aren't looking too good. The Texans are fighting for a division. And I think the Jets could give them a battle. I honestly think that they're going to lose to the Bills or Broncos, though. I think the Patriots will finish the regular season like 14-2. But I kind of like the Panthers. They kind of remind me of the way the Seahawks just kind of jumped onto the scene. I mean, they're not exactly what the Seahawks were. I mean, other than the fact that they have like maybe a little bit of the same quarterback, as far as style that the quarterback plays goes. But, I think the Panthers will probably lose later just because their schedule favors it. But I think that looks like it could be the Super Bowl matchup, and we'd be in a treat. We'd be in for a treat if that was a Super Bowl. It'd be a rematch of, like, Super Bowl. I don't remember what Super Bowl number it was. It was a while ago.
All right, so it sounds like you're saying you think the Patriots are at a risk to lose tonight, which would make them the first loser of undefeated teams.
Yeah, I think the Bills are kind of underrated, and I think the Jets are kind of underrated.
The Bills definitely have a great defense. Great defense going for them. Jim Schwartz, we hate him here in Detroit, but he is running a good defense in Buffalo.
He's good as a defensive coordinator job for sure. So
my take on that is it's going to be interesting to see how New England fares with the loss of their wideout number one, Julian Edelman. He's a great receiver. That's going to put more pressure on Gronkowski, especially in the red zone, to score those touchdowns for him. I know they lost their backup running back a couple weeks too, so they're favoring the pass game a little bit more. And the Panthers just look great. Defense is, I believe they're about league average as of right now. But the offense is putting up over 28 points a game, which puts them in the top five.
Be the MVP this year, I'd say.
Yeah, he's definitely having a great year along with the team. Taking that team to success, 10-0. So if they get past a couple of tough games, they may be the second team ever to go 16-0.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, moving on, the Lions, our hometown Lions, started the season off, 1-7, was it?
They're 3-7. The Packers at Lambeau for the first time in our lives.
That was cool.
And then this week they beat the Raiders. And Then they're going to be playing on Thanksgiving, which will be against the Eagles, which that looks like a pretty winnable game. The Eagles look like they're quickly falling out of contention again this year. And I think that the Lions are kind of, because they're not going to make the playoffs, so they're kind of hurting themselves, because I think Caldwell's not that great of a coach, and he should probably go. Because he just doesn't, he's just way too conservative and not very smart. So I feel like they're almost saving his job right now, and it's not necessarily a good thing. And I also think that they're kind of screwing themselves out of good draft picks, so that's not too encouraging.
Well, I've seen some interviews saying that, initially when the Lions were losing, we heard that Caldwell had lost the players in the locker room, that he lost the faith of the players.
Yeah, I feel like that's just a media thing that you always hear, and no matter what sport really, if they're doing bad, they lost the locker room, and if they're doing good, they have the locker room. And I mean, it's just kind of like a thing that, you know, I think it's something more or less that the media creates, but I honestly think that now even
that.
They're saying that, they'd run through a wall with him. He's not the best coach. I mean, he's probably not the worst coach in football, but I just don't think he's the right fit for Lions.
Where I was going with that is, as far as you saying that the players are saving his job, Golden Tate and I want to say it was Levy came out and both said that Caldwell definitely has the team, they're behind him, and they'd like to rally behind him and win with Caldwell in Detroit.
Well, so. Of course, I mean, you know, they're not going to come out and say anything negative, of course. They also could have not said anything, so I guess saying something good is better than saying nothing. But I think that's the standard answer you're going to get. I'm sure the media asked them about that, too, so they're not going to say, oh, no, he sucks, we want him out of here. Because, I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, that's just something you don't do. Because that hurts everybody.
So
I'm not really upset to it, saying, like, oh, get him out of here.
Yeah, I think most people can agree the problem right now is with the offense. It's looking better with the new offensive coordinator, Jim Bob Cooter. He looks like he's running plays that are a little bit more risky. I've seen him go for it on a couple fourth downs. Maybe Caldwell has faith in him and the offense there. They picked up a fourth down last week. I remember that play against Green Bay. And the defense looks like it's stepping up. They've played two decent teams. I mean, the Raiders just fell below 500 with the loss today. And Green Bay is Green Bay, no matter how you look at it. Randall, the duo of Randall Cobb and Aaron Rodgers.
And going into Green Bay at Lambeau and winning is really hard.
Yeah.
So,
like Nick mentioned, that hasn't been done in our lifetime. Lions have never won at Lambeau until last week.
Especially
so that was definitely
Aaron
neat
Rodgers.
To see.
He hadn't thrown like a home interception over a year. I think he threw like a freak one like earlier this year where it was just like a tipped ball or something that was just like a total luck interception. So, yeah.
Yeah, so the defense is looking better, as I was saying. I have total faith in Terrell Austin. I think he turned the defense around. Nick has a little bit different take on that.
I mean, I think he's good. I just think he's a little bit overrated. I think Sue did a lot of work last year, and the Lions did a lot of work. And I think that now that they're gone, you know, it obviously shows. They're obviously a little bit worse this year. I mean, they're kind of due for a little bit of regression, but I just think that he's not like the miracle worker everybody sets him out to be. I just think he's a solid defensive coordinator. I definitely wouldn't fire Austin. I think he's the least of our problems as far as coaches go.
I mean, I think he's a top-of-the-line defensive coordinator only because we had all these players. We had Glover Quinn. We had Ndamukong Suh. We had Ziggy Ansah and Nick Fairley 2 years before he even came into the picture, and our secondary was still struggling. I just think his defense is definitely, in a way, it's helped out the secondary. I think he's got the linebackers more involved. So that's looking good for them. Anything else you want to add on about the Lions before we move on to the playoff picture?
Do you have an end of the year prediction for him, I guess? And whether or not you think Caldwell is going to keep his job? I think they're going to go 6-10 and that he does keep his job. I think they're going to finish through really hot, and then they're going to end up with like the 10th or 11th pick. Which they can still hopefully put to good use. But
yeah, I'll say we lose. I say we lose the next one to the Packers because that was, we should have lost that game. We did everything in our power to lose that game. Mason Crosby just didn't get his foot on the field goal right. I say we lose the next one to the Packers and maybe one of two to the Bears moving forward. So I'm gonna go with one less loss than or one more loss than you and a 5-11 season.
Then you think he keeps his job?
I think they'll keep Caldwell around for another year. I mean, I don't think. I mean, the team's success We were supposed to be successful this year, but things happen. I mean, the Panthers weren't supposed to be undefeated this year, so that just happens in football. Any sport, really. So we're going to move on to the NFL playoff picture after a short break here.
The most important thing is that you go. Step outside the norm to grow and to succeed. Push ahead and begin something new. You'll experience challenges and victories, but not always in the ways that you would expect. The most important thing is that you go.
And we are back. This next portion of the show is brought to you by Western Michigan University. The most important thing to do is to go west. We're just going to talk a little bit about the NFL playoff picture. Right now, as we discussed earlier, we have two undefeated teams, both of those earning the top seed in their respective conferences. Second seeds are looking very good, too. The Arizona Cardinals, 7-2 record, right now taking the second seed and the second bye of the NFC playoffs. And the Bengals in the AFC come in at 8-1. They are the second seed in the AFC. So, I know me and Nick were talking a little bit earlier about who we think the last seed in the NFC may be, the sixth seed in that conference. Right now it stands as the Falcons. They are 6-4. But I know Nick thinks the Buccaneers look very impressive as well.
Yeah, I think Winston's coming to his own. And similar to RG3, who made the playoff appearances for season, I think that he can lead the Bucs to the playoffs. Especially because I think the Bucs and Falcons have, I know they have at least one game, but they might have, I think, two games coming up against each other. The Falcons were 5-0, but now they're 1-4 in their last couple games. And their losses are really, really bad losses. I think they've lost now to the 49ers. And then this week, the Colts, which, I mean, if you're going to make the playoffs, the Colts are pretty much leading the worst division in football. So, you know, you're going to have to beat the Colts. So I think the Falcons are probably going to drop out of the spot. And I think the Bucs are now 5-5 after today, which they are. And they don't have the toughest schedule coming up. So I think that the Bucs will finish out the year 9-7, and I think that they will that they're going to make the playoffs over the Falcons because the Falcons have Minnesota next week, but it's in the Georgia Dome. But you know, I think they're going to lose to Minnesota. I think that's a good team. And they have to go to Tampa. And I really think if Tampa beats Atlanta right there, that that'll be the turning point for both of them. Then Atlanta has to go to Carolina, which that's probably going to be, you know, a loss. They have to play Carolina two times, actually. That's who they have to play. They've already played Tampa once. They have to play Carolina two times. That was the team they had to play two times, which is even worse because, obviously, Carolina's better. So, you know, I only see Atlanta really winning three games from here on out. I think Atlanta is probably like an 8-8 team, which is pretty astonishing considering they started off 5-0. But I think they just had a kind of an easy cakewalk type of schedule, and now they're finally, playing real competition.
Yeah, they're getting to the meat of their schedule for sure. As it stands, I also believe that the Buccaneers will take over the sixth seed. Whoever it is, either the Falcons or the Buccaneers, they're definitely going to be the sixth seed. There's not much movement around there, as the division winners always take the top four seeds.
Then obviously there's the Seahawks, that are staying around, but their offenses look pretty pitiful this year. I mean, they almost lost to the Lions, and they're 4-5. They really blew a good chance against Arizona last week when they came back. So I mean, they're going to have to pretty much win. Well, not win out, but they're going to have to pretty much go only lose one game from here on out. And they do have, you know, a pretty easy schedule, but they still have to go to Arizona. They still have to Pittsburgh. They still have to go to Minnesota. And then, you know, there's always, like, the Rams. I know the Rams have played Seattle tough the last couple years. So I think it's going to be really hard for the Seahawks at this point. But, I mean, I guess never really sleep on the Seahawks because they're obviously still a pretty good team. They've got a lot of talent, you know, in Seattle.
Yeah,
so
the
I think they could be the outside shot. But I got the Bucs right now.
The Seahawks defense has stayed consistent. The Legion of Boom may not be what it was the last few years. But the offense has just slowed down. It almost looks as Russell Wilson, I mean, he can't do it all alone. There's 11 guys on the field. But he doesn't look as explosive as, I'm blanking on a word, but he's not being the playmaker that he has been in past years. And the addition of Jimmy Graham was huge in the offseason. Hasn't played out as much. He hasn't played well. They haven't been targeting him as much as... He hasn't had as many targets as he had in New Orleans, so that's just part of the Seahawks offense.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you're trying to look for something that, you know, went a little bit differently now for Seattle compared to when they won the Super Bowl for Russell Wilson here, looking at his career stats. And really, you know, nothing stands out. I mean, his TD INT ratio is definitely worse. He's thrown more interceptions this year. So, I mean, the explosiveness isn't quite there. He's turning the ball over a little more. And another thing is he's already gotten sacked 33 times, which is as much as he got sacked in all of 2012. And in 2013, he got sacked 44 times, which is actually his career high the year they won the Super Bowl. But I think that's going to be shattered this year. I think he'll get sacked probably, you know, he's on pace for at least 50 sacks. So I just think that that it's a little bit of a combination of the line isn't as good. Because I know they traded, like, Max Unger recently, their center.
Who was the starting center in the last two years, yeah.
You know, could be kind of an underrated type of loss. And I just think the line's a little bit weaker, and he's not as explosive, too, which can lead to that higher sack rate. Because obviously, Russell Wilson was known for dancing around almost.
Yeah, if he's not as elusive. Yeah,
and it's hard to do, so I can almost understand, you know, why that's happening. But it's kind of like he lost the whole step this year, if you will. So that's kind of what's killing them. So, I mean, I think they're still a team to watch out for, though, because they have a lot of talent still, so they could turn it around. But I definitely don't see the Falcons holding on. And, you know, the Vikings, I think they're going to be a team that makes an early exit in the playoffs. But I think that they've had such a hot start that it's going to be really, really hard for them to get knocked out of the playoffs at this point.
Yeah. I was actually looking at that situation. Just as a little note, the winner of the NFC North, which looks like it's either going to be the Packers or the Vikings, definitely has a shot at that second seed in the NFC, which would give them a bye in the first round.
Yeah, I'd say Arizona probably gets it, though, and I think Green Bay will probably be the third seed. If we're doing a playoff prediction right now, I'd go like this. I'd say Carolina, obviously, number one, Arizona, two, Green Bay, three. And then I'm going to go with the Giants, four, for sure. I think the Giants could challenge 10 wins. I think that their schedule isn't as, you know, tough this half, and I think that Coughlin and Eli Manning have a little bit of a history, so I think that they're going to come out on top in that division, because I think the Eagles and Cowboys look like they're done, too, and the Redskins are good with Kirk Cousins, but I think they're going to finish in second. So I got them at four, and then I'd go Vikings at five. I think they'll be about a 10-win team, and I'll say Bucks at six, Seahawks at seven, and Falcons at eight right now.
Okay, we're just going to move on to a little bit talking about the AFC side of the playoff picture. As we were talking about earlier, the Patriots look like they could lose a couple games down the stretch. The Bengals right now are in the second seed at that point. They could take over. Pull up the Bengals' schedule really quickly. I'm not sure what they're going to look like down the stretch.
And then Denver's the three seed right now. I think they'll stay that way. You know, it may seem like a big downgrade going from Peyton Manning to Brock Osweiler, because Manning's getting older, and obviously he's been hurt, we found out, you know. So I think that that's almost not as big of a downgrade as some people, you know, in their head would think, oh my goodness. I think Osweiler actually looked halfway decent today, too. So, I mean, it might even be somewhat of an upgrade in the end. So I don't think they're, you know, downgrading. I think the Broncos will go in as the three seed for sure. And the four seed between the Texans and Colts could probably be one of the last playoff teams that get decided. But right now, the wild card's super close, too. I don't think we're going to see an AFC South or West team out of the playoffs, or in the playoffs, I mean, a team out of that division, as I was trying to say. But I think the Bills, Jets, and Steelers will be battling for the last two playoff spots. And if I had my pick of the litter, I'd say the Steelers get the 5 seed, and the I'd say the Bills get the 6 seed.
I'm going to go with the Jets in the 6 seed. The Jets have looked super impressive this season, especially in the run game. They're just tearing it up. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick who is now the starter in New York. I think he's going to blossom down the stretch, and he's looked impressive thus far. So I think the Jets get the 6th seed, Steelers with the 5 as well.
Yeah, I mean, so I think in the playoffs, you know, the Bengals always make the playoffs and don't do too well. And I think the Patriots are, of course, the favorites. I mean, you have to say they're the favorites at this point to, you know, win the AFC. But if I had to pick a second team, I'd almost keep eyeing the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger looked really good last week playing injured. Of course, it was against the Browns, who are, I think, in line for the number one pick. But, I mean, it was still impressive with an injury nonetheless. I mean, there's still an NFL team out there. So I think the Steelers are a team to watch, too. I think they could be that wild card team that makes a run this year.
All right, with that, we're going to end this segment, move on to, we're going to talk about college football next. We'll give you our take on what teams we think will make the 4-team playoff at the end of the year, and we'll talk about the remaining schedules, win-loss possibilities, and I also want to talk about, you know, smaller schools getting snubbed as far as awards and bowl games and stuff like that. So that's up next.
That'll be Austin's own rant. We're headed into the final week of the regular season for most college football teams, which means lots of drama and excitement. And rivalry week for some teams, like there's the Iron Bowl this weekend between Auburn and Alabama, which in 2013 provided the greatest finish I've ever seen probably to any sporting event, as far as excitement goes and unpredictability and everything, which is, of course, when Alabama kicker kicked it short and Chris Davis, the corner for Auburn, ran the ball all the way back and pretty much secured, or they knocked Alabama out of title hopes, because this was the year before the playoff was implemented. And it pretty much secured a Rose Bowl spot for the Spartans at the time, which, of course, is the college football team that I root for, MSU. So you know, that was pretty exciting for me then, too. But anyways, we're moving into the last week, and there's a lot to be decided with the college football playoff. We're just going to look at this, like, barring any upsets, because, I mean, those can always happen. But, I mean, you know, the chances of them happening are slim. So we're just going to look at it without, you know, the upsets. So, basically, we have, going into this week, we're going to have Clemson number 1, Alabama 2, Iowa probably 3, and Notre Dame probably 4, and then Oklahoma and Michigan State are the first two out, which with really good chances of getting in. Michigan State just has to beat Penn State, which should be pretty, you know, simple, straightforward, and Iowa just has to beat Nebraska, which same deal for them. So probably that's setting up for a Big Ten championship between MSU and Iowa. I'll take MSU in that because I think they've had a tougher schedule too. Iowa, the toughest win they have is against Northwestern, who you know, was good for a while, but they're a 2-loss team, and they have Northwestern doesn't have that tough of a schedule either. So, I mean, it's just kind of like a not that great of a win. They didn't play any tough non-conference opponents. At least Michigan State has Oregon. And even though Oregon didn't have as great of a year as expected,
they did move back into the top 25 this week.
Yeah.
Oregon did.
So I mean, I think that's a good win for MSU. Plus, MSU has wins against Ohio State and Michigan, which are two pretty decent ones, too. And, you know, their loss, like I said, Austin kind of disagreed with me, but it's kind of like more of a fluke loss. Like, because, you know, 90 times out of 100, you know, Michigan State's going to beat Nebraska. It was just kind of a combination of a lot of bad things happening that day.
And
I think Michigan State's a better team. And, you know, in most cases, you know, when a team loses to a team, normally it means they're better, you know, for the most part. Like, obviously, when Alabama beats up on an SEC opponent, it's probably because they're better. It's not because they had a, you know, fluky bad type of game. So,
I mean, that makes sense and all, but in football, the way I look at it, and I believe the way the College Football Playoff Committee is going to look at it, is in football, it is a one-game series, if you will. And if you're talking about fluky losses, then let's just put Michigan in the College Football Playoff because their loss to MSU was a fluky loss, you know.
So. Yeah, but anyways, I mean, I think eventually the playoff will be 8 teams, and I think that's what it should be because right now you have 5 major conferences, so it makes sense that like the Big 12 needs to put in a conference championship, and then you'd have 5, you know, teams from that win all the major conferences, and then like 3 wild cards, if you will, which would make sense because obviously the SEC usually has like at least 2 really good teams, so you know, and then like it'd leave a spot open for like Notre Dame, who's having a good year, or like the Big 12, Baylor could be the second team, Ohio State and Michigan State, you know, like the Big Ten has three of the top eight teams right now, so it'd leave kind of a wild card. But I think this year it's going to be, you know, one team from the ACC, one from the SEC, one from the Big Ten, and then one either from the Big 12 or independent. Notre Dame's playing Stanford this weekend. I think there's a good chance they lose that. And I think if they do, definitely Oklahoma's in. And I think Oklahoma would be the fourth seed. And if not, if Notre Dame wins that, I think Notre Dame would be in as the three seed. Because that would be kind of, I think Notre Dame is going to prove their worth this week. And the Big 12 still doesn't have a championship game. So Oklahoma has to win this week and kind of hope for the best. And then, you know, barring that upset, like I said, Michigan State and Iowa, you know, on either side barring an upset, are going to play for the Big Ten title. And that'll probably be a play-in for either the three seed if Oklahoma makes it in or the four seed if Notre Dame makes it in the playoff. And I, of course, I'm going to take Michigan State in that. Not just because I like them, but I think they're, you know, their schedule better prepared them. I like their coaching staff better. You know, if you look at all the statistics, like the kind of, if you will, the college football sabermetrics, because I'm, you know, a baseball guy, so that's what I'm going to call them. But, you know, they all favor kind of Michigan State and show that they're probably, like, you know, the better team than Iowa. So I'm going to take them. And I think if Connor Cook comes back healthy, especially, you know, they can kind of rest them next week and he can come back healthy and lead them to hopefully a victory over Iowa. So if I had to predict it right now, I think Clemson and Alabama are going to stay 1-2. Clemson will be 1, Alabama will be 2. And then, you know, Notre Dame and Stanford, that'll be a good close game. So, I mean, Notre Dame wins, I'd say Notre Dame 3, Michigan State 4. If not, then I have Michigan State 3, Oklahoma 4. But I think there's just really six teams with a legitimate shot at this point. I mean, I know you like Baylor, and they're kind of the fringy team. But I think, like, once you get down to Ohio State, even though Ohio State's a one-loss team, they kind of – that loss and the timing of the loss, it was just really bad. So, I mean, I think they kind of played themselves out of the playoff.
Yeah, as much as I hope Baylor would beat Oklahoma in Week 10, it just came down to Baylor giving up way too many points, which was the opposite of what they had been doing. They've been blowing teams out most of the season, scoring, on some cases, 40 or more points in the first half, and their defense was playing well. But that loss against Oklahoma – we'll keep them out of the playoff this year. I think it'd be interesting to see a team in the Big 12 in the playoffs. I'm kind of pulling for Oklahoma in that sense. I'm not sure who they play in this final week.
Baylor actually has two games left, and their next game's at TCU. So if they win at TCU, I don't know. You know, it kind of, like I said, they're kind of a fringy team. But I, like I said, I think if you keep Ohio State out, you got to keep Baylor out, because I think Ohio State's a little bit better than Baylor just by dragging it. But I think if Baylor wins their next two, especially, they'll be in a really good bowl game, you know, like last year. So
if Michigan State stays undefeated, there's no reason why we wouldn't see them in the college football playoff.
Undefeated the next two games is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. They beat the defending national champion.
With backup quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to count that. I'm not going to take that into effect, because that's just what happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But they beat the defending national champs. Very impressive. Played great defense against them. It looks like the defense is finally starting to come around after a shaky start.
Which is good, because if the offense, you know, they kind of had a tough week. But like I said, they played backup quarterbacks. And Cook, you know, I mean, he hasn't had, like, the flashy season, but he's definitely been really solid this year.
He's been consistent. And that's almost what you look for in a quarterback, because if you know what you're going to get out of the quarterback position, you can kind of build the rest of your
game plan around that. The running back's almost been a carousel, but like Jerod Holmes, who is out of Carmen, which is literally like the high school is literally like not even 10 minutes away from where we're recording this right now. He's been pretty impressive, and he's not even the most impressive of the bunch, but a little shout out to him there. But, you know, their running backs are all really good, and Aaron Burbridge has had just an amazing year, too, at wide receiver. He might win their best wide receiver award in the Big Ten. So I think Michigan State, as long as they beat Iowa, which, you know, it's very doable, that they'll be the 3 or 4 seed in the playoff. So, I mean, and if I had to predict what's going to happen, if you want like a solid prediction from me, because I said if Notre Dame wins, I'm going to say Notre Dame loses this weekend to Stanford, because I just don't think they're as prepared, their schedule prepared them very well, and I feel like a loss is coming for them. So what I'd do is I would have I'd have Clemson as the 1 seed playing the 4 seed Oklahoma, and I'd have Alabama and Michigan State, which would both be really good games, I think.
All right, I'm going to wrap this up real quick with my prediction. I'm going to say Clemson stays number one. If Alabama beats Auburn this week, they stay number two. I'm going to go with Michigan State number three with the victory over Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. And Oklahoma number four. Although, if Oklahoma loses and Florida wins, they could easily take that the number four spot as well. They've been playing really well.
Yeah, and if Florida beats Florida State, I mean, that's another big win to put on their resume. And they went, I think Florida went 7-1 in the SEC, which is always really impressive.
Yeah, the SEC is always that so-called power conference.
So, yeah, I mean,
in front of the Big Ten.
It's almost hard to have an undefeated team come out of the SEC. That's why those Alabama teams from a few years ago were so impressive. I mean, you know, their only loss is to LSU, who is a pretty solid team themselves. So.
And then I'm just going to go back, talk for a few minutes on what you said about the 18 playoff. Totally agree that it should be an 18 playoff, although I think people are going to want... I think people are going to want the playoff to keep increasing. I said in an earlier podcast, if we get an 18 playoff, people are going to want a 16-team playoff, but kind of changed my mind on that. I think an 18 playoff would be great. That'd give teams, like smaller teams, like a Boise State, a chance. You know, when Boise State went undefeated 2 years in a row, that'd give them a chance at a playoff as the 8 seed. It would just give a couple, it'd give more wiggle room for the committee to give those teams a shot. Marshall last year, they looked like they were going to be undefeated, even though they lost in one of the last weeks. I think that's just a great idea for the NCAA to consider.
Yeah, I agree that it should be an 18 playoff, but I think that it'd still take a lot for a team to, I mean, they'd have to go undefeated and be really impressive, because there's not even a team out of a minor conference that's undefeated. Literally, the only two undefeated teams in the Division I right now are Clemson and Iowa. So, I mean, and people are giving Iowa a tough time, and it, you know, and rightfully so, because their strength schedule is 67 in the nation right now. It's like on ESPN, which threw that ad up. I'm sorry if you hear that in there. Their strength schedule is 67, so, I mean, people are giving them a tough time. So I can only imagine if, like, Marshall made it. Especially as an 8 seed, because if, like, Marshall last year would have played, who was the 1 seed last year? It wasn't Florida State, who was the 1 seed last year? It was Bama. And I just don't think that Marshall would have a chance against Alabama, I mean, being completely honest.
Well, I mean, as you said, there's only two teams undefeated in Division I college football right now, and I just think if you can play consistently enough, if you can play well enough to go undefeated every week, then you deserve a shot at something more than the Fiesta Bowl, I think they played in a couple years ago.
Yeah, but they'd also be getting, my argument is they'd be, like right now, they'd be getting over, right now Ohio State is the 8th ranked team. I just don't see how you can justify that Marshall love last year could get in over Ohio State of this year, because it doesn't, Ohio State's only lost in the past 2 years is to Michigan State by 3 points. And, you know, if Ohio State played Marshall's 2014 schedule, I think Ohio State would go 11-0 98 times out of 100. I'd put that number on it. Honestly. It'd be a really slim, if you sim the season a bunch of times, you know, with their really accurate statistics, I would think that, you know, in one of those projection systems, I don't think that they would lose a game many times. So... That's my argument.
Well, we're going to wrap this up and move on to talking about a little bit about the MLB offseason. We're running short on time here.
We have a lot to talk about. We've been out for months, so.
Yep, so we're going to move on.
Talk about
and
the Tigers, baby. We're going to come back strong.
See year. What happens. All right, so we're going to start this next segment talking a little bit about the Tigers and other most recent trades, moves made.
I'm also
going
to hit on the Kimbrel trade and the Simmons trade, nine Tigers wise. We're going to talk about the Tigers. Also, real quick, Ohio State has lost twice now in the past years. I said once, but I was forgetting about their Virginia Tech, I think it was, lost at the beginning of last year. So I wanted to correct myself really quick. So I think we'll just start with the Tigers moves, because they've made two. You know, not super big moves, but definitely moves that are big to them, and that'll, you know, help the Tigers out in the future, meaning this year. Because they're both guys that are under contract for this year, and then I think they both have team options with buyouts for next year. And more likely than not, both guys' team options are going to be picked up. I've actually yet to write about this, but I'm going to write about this for Baseball Central, which is the Saturday right for. And I'm also going to be updating our blog with some content this winter, so be on the lookout for that. But the first move they made was they acquired Francisco Rodriguez from Milwaukee for infielder Javier Betancourt and a player to be named later. And Al Avila also said that there's the possibility that the Tigers could get a player to be named later. I don't know how. And it'd probably be a bad scenario, like K-Rod got hurt or something. So it's probably not a scenario the Tigers want. But out of the two trades, Javier Betancourt is easily the best prospect that the Tigers gave up. And really the only player with a ton of value that they gave up. And he's not worth a ton of value. I think he projects to kind of be like a utility infielder, maybe a fringe starting second baseman if his power develops. He's average to above average at second base on defense. Probably average at best at shortstop. He profiles better as a second baseman. We got to see him, and he's pretty talented for West Michigan last year. I have no doubts that he'll make the majors. Just what he does when he gets there is kind of the question, I think. I think he has a pretty good chance of making the majors. He's pretty young still, too.
He seems to be very advanced for his age, yeah, as far as his rankings and just the talent he's shown.
Yeah, but for Francisco Rodriguez, that was good. A lot of people, the biggest complaint was like that Francisco Rodriguez was washed up because he had his big record-breaking season in 2008 with the Angels right before he hit free agency, and then he got a record-breaking deal, I think, as a closer for the Mets. And then he kind of had a couple troubles with the Mets, and he didn't, he obviously was it. I mean, once you have a big year like that, you're never, ever, unless you're like Barry Bonds, going to live up, the next year or any other years like that. So K-Rod's actually, he had one of his best years since that record-breaking year.
I think he was an All-Star.
Oh, yeah, he's been an All-Star
the last 2 years, yeah.
But this year was even better than the year before. It was, like I had said, I think by numbers and ERA plus and everything, which just measures how, I think he was like 74% better than the league average pitcher, which relievers ERA pluses tend to run on the higher side. For reliever, that's not like probably top of the pack, but it's above average for sure. And the Tigers just need above average relievers. I mean, K-Rod probably figures for sure to get late innings. Probably he'll be the closer. But I just hope Ausmus uses guys like his closer in non-save situations too. Like if the Tigers need a big out in the eighth, I think K-Rod is veteran enough to do that. And I also don't think the age is going to be an issue. And if it is, we only have 1 year of him. It's not even like Joe Nathan where we have 2 years. Where we'd have to, if he's bad this year, we can cut ties with him. It'll cost us $4 million, but hey, it's not the ultimate price. Tigers are a high payroll team anyways. So, and on the subject of age, he's only going to be 34, I think, this year, K-Rod, and then 35 next year if we keep him. And Joaquin Benoit was, I think, 35 when the Tigers signed him. Like, his first year with the Tigers, he was his age 35 season. I'll check on that right now. But I know Benoit is definitely older. Benoit had two really good years with us, and he's still really good. The Mariners wanted him really badly, and the Mariners actually didn't give up a ton, but they ended up getting him, and he's probably one of the better relievers on the market, trade market.
I think people tend to I'm short on the word here, but like. Kind of like overvalue the age factor of players because there's been
when it comes to relievers and pitchers are a lot more unpredictable. Let me say, if you ever read the Fangraphs section about like aging, the hitters follow more of a pattern where their prime is ages 27 to 32 or whatever, their best years. Where pitchers are really unpredictable because I think pitching's a whole different part of the game, obviously, but it's a lot different because hitting. You're always going to need a good reaction time and everything, If your reactions start to become slow and your coordination starts to go, you're not going to be able to catch up to a ball anymore and you're going to become a worse hitter. Whereas pitching, you can make adjustments. You don't have to be a fireball pitcher. So if you lose some velocity, you can, turn your career around by becoming a really good junk ball pitcher. So,
yeah, I mean,
I agree.
This is kind of a stretch, but Mariano Rivera, the greatest closer of all time, he pitched out of his mind. He was 43 years old when he retired, so that just goes to show.
And he was still pretty dominant. with his pitch, the cutter. He never lost anything on any bite. Benoit was 33 with Tigers gun, so I was a little bit older. But I was in the ballpark. I mean, his last season with us was the best season. He had an ERA of 2.01. He was in the final vote for the All-Star game, got 24 saves. His fielding independent pitching was 2.87, which is really good. He only allowed a little over a base runner an inning. Great strikeout to walk ratio. His best year with the Tigers at age 35. And then he went to San Diego and did even better. 1.49 ERA his first year in San Diego, and a 2.34 ERA last year for the Padres. So yeah, I mean, Benoit, of course, he's not the perfect comparison, but him and Rivera, we bring them up, I guess, just to give you some idea of, you know, the fact that relievers and age don't really mix together, and that K-Rod isn't washed up, as I've heard people say. So we're probably going to have to move on to the next trade, so we don't dedicate too much time.
Yeah,
to
I mean, there's just
one.
Yeah, just one more thing is basically what it comes down to. What we're trying to say is Betancourt was, well, I think he was a top 10 prospect for the Tigers.
I think he was right outside the top 10. I think he was good. I think he had a major league future.
But
and my rankings had him 13.
But that's a small price to pay for who could be what could be a good closer, and that's. I mean, that's what the Tigers have been lacking the last couple of years. Just thinking back to 2013, and we had such a great team, a team that probably should have won a world championship, but the bullpen was always shaky. So I think if we start to bolster that bullpen a little bit, or just at least have a solid bullpen, we can definitely have a run at a championship soon.
Yeah, so we'll move on to the Maven deal. Let me say this about Al Avila, because this is his first offseason as GM. We're used to miracle worker Dave Dombrowski. You know, I think he's proven that he can make really good moves, really good value moves so far. I mean, I think the two moves he's made, the one we're about to get into included, were really good moves. I just, at this point, he's got to, you know, show that he can make the big moves, obviously, the right decisions when it comes to, like, making big decisions, like maybe pulling the trigger on a big free agent or a big trade. Because, you know, we know Dombrowski was never afraid to do that, and he had a pretty good success rate when it came to that. And then I think he's got to show that he's good at drafting, because that was one thing that Dombrowski, besides building a bullpen, that was probably his second biggest downside. The Tigers had, you know, okay draft picks. I mean, there's Verlander, obviously, that's a crown jewel. Then there was guys like, he drafted Cameron Maben, who is the guy we traded for, who's had a decent major league career so far, and Drew Smiley, who figures to maybe be the ace next year in Tampa. So he's had his good draft picks, but I think Avila's got to show that he's not going to have any busts as draft picks, because a lot of Dombrowski's picks got traded, and then they didn't do as well, which trading them could have had a factor into it, but, you know, because the Tigers didn't develop them all the way up. But the second move was we traded Ian Kroll, the Tigers, traded Ian Kroll and Gabe Spire to the Atlanta Braves for Cameron Maben. And Maben figures to be the platoon partner for Anthony Gosse in center field this next year. Maben played out of his mind in the first half, kind of had slumped a little bit in the second half, but he had one of his better years last year with Atlanta. He's only going to be 28 or 29 this upcoming year. He was, you know, fun fact about him, he was pretty much the major piece in the Miguel Cabrera trade. It definitely wouldn't have happened without Cameron Maben. So now he's kind of come full circle. I think Justin Verlander had a tweet about that. So, you know, I definitely like this move for the Tigers. I wouldn't expect too much out of Maben. Defensive metrics don't tend to favor him. But he seems to be, to me, that he can, if he can improve his defense a little bit, because defensive metrics can really vary from year to year. I remember Austin Jackson led the major leagues in defensive WAR in 2011, and then had a negative one like 2 years later. And in 2014, he had a really bad year by that statistic. And I think last year came back kind of up a little more towards normal. But, you know, they vary. So if Maben can improve his defense, that could help. And another thing in the metrics, Gosse and Maben both could be plus defenders, definitely above average defenders in center. But Gosse rated out really badly last year. And I always told Austin, me and him went to a lot of games last year, and he can vouch for me. I always said, man, Gosse plays too shallow. I played a little bit of outfield when I played baseball, and I always like to play deep because I always thought running in was easier than running out, which I think 90% of people who play outfield would agree with me. There's that one special person who has lightning speed and likes moving backwards. But it's definitely, I think, easier coming in. So I just think Ghost had a lot of balls that went over his head, and I think positioning had a lot to do with it. And I remember listening to a game, and Dan Dickerson and Jim Price were two very great analysts, I think, and have really good vast knowledge of the game of baseball, said exactly what I had been thinking. So it kind of made me feel good. But I like the maybe deal for the Tigers. It's not like the all-star move. Like I said, the Tigers are still probably going to make their big move. But they're definitely coming out firing earlier, and they're making moves that make their team better. And they're not insignificant moves by any means. These aren't just role players. I'd say they're like regular players. Maben will probably platoon. But Maben can play any outfield position, too, and help a lot. And another underrated thing is he can come in and replace Rajai Davis. And he has a lot of speed, 23 stolen bases last year. And then the last year he was healthy before that, he had 40 with the Padres in 2011. And he probably has enough power to hit 10, 15 dingers throughout the year. So if Maben gets on base, and maybe, you know, he could even make an adjustment hitting-wise. I like what Wally Joyner's done. He's fixed J.D. Martinez. He's helped fix J.D. Martinez. So, I mean, if he could make a few hitting adjustments, I think he could end up being a decent player for the Tigers and definitely a great value because Ian Kroll, you know, he has potential and he's a fireball and lefty, but it just wasn't going to work out. I think, you know, the Tigers had tried to work with him here and just the coaching wasn't working, and I wish him the best in Atlanta because he seems like a pretty good guy from all I've ever, you know, talked to him or seen him. And Gabe Spire has the upside of maybe being a good long reliever, a middle reliever, and he's a lefty. But I don't think the Tigers give up an awful lot. I mean, a lefty that throws 95 is rare to find, but if he can't prevent base runners and gives up hard hits, I mean, he's pretty much worthless. So hopefully Kroll can fix that and do well in Atlanta. But still, it was pretty good value for the Tigers. I'll let Austin comment now since I took up all the time.
Yeah, regardless of what Kroll does in the future, we're definitely glad to have Maben back in Detroit. I think we're going to see him become a fan favorite. And sometimes that's value, too. If he's going to like it here in Detroit, you know, we might see more production out of him. Because baseball's a very mental game, and you kind of have to be happy where you're at and happy in your situation.
I liked Atlanta a lot last year because he said a lot of good things about it, and he had his best year in quite a few. The thing about Maben, too, is he struggled with the injuries in 2013 and wasn't fully healthy in 2014, didn't get to play every day. But the last couple seasons that he's been healthy, two of his last three seasons he's been fully healthy, which are basically he's only played three full seasons in the majors at this point. But he was really, you know, he had a lot of value in two of the three, I'd say. Last year he only came out to a 0.6 WAR, and like I said, that can be attributed to a really bad second half. But actually in 2012 his WAR was 3.2, so and in 2011 was his best year, his WAR was 4.5. So I mean, if you can get like that 3 WAR Cameron Maben back, that's just such a great trade. So the Tigers still have to do some more too, because they're going to have to go out and obviously they're going to have to get some starting pitching and probably some more relievers and possibly a left fielder.
Let's each go through and maybe say one or two free agents that we'd like to see the Tigers target.
Well, I'll start, and then we'll move on to the we'll cover the Simmons and Kimbrel trades, since those were the two major trades that have happened. But the two free agents I'd like them to target that are big names are Jordan Zimmermann, because I think he fit really well in the Tigers park, and that would be a guy who could slot right next to Justin Verlander. And then Yoenis Cespedes would be the other big name guy, because I think he did really well here last year. He was really impressive. He went to New York and did good. But, I mean, Cespedes might be a little unrealistic. But if I were looking at big-name guys, that's who. Trade target, I look at Andrew Miller for sure. Maybe Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce is coming off two down seasons. But I think right field is kind of friendly for power at Comerica. I think he could hit that tunnel that I sit by with my season tickets a lot. And I think he could definitely hit 30 homers in Detroit. So those would be two guys off the top of my head as trade targets. There's a lot of guys that they could sign that aren't, you know, as high up there as free agents. There's Doug Fister. He's pretty good. I think he'd fit as like a 5-star. I wouldn't expect too much out of him because his strikeout rate's been going down. And, you know, he's not quite the same pitcher he was in Detroit the first time. But he'd for sure be an upgrade over where Alfredo Simon is a 5-starter, I think. And then also I like Darren O'Day. And then, like, I like a lot of free agents. This free agent class is deep. A guy like Iwakuma, the Tigers said they'd target him. He's a really good starting pitching arm. You know, relievers, I said O'Day, I think. Mark Lowe would be good. You know, and then you could always look at, like, a guy like Mike Leake. He'd be cheaper than Jordan Zimmerman if you miss out on Jordan Zimmerman. Mike Leake would be a really good starter to sign. I kind of would like him to steer clear of Giovanni Gallardo because I think his season was almost a little more of a fluke last year. And Wei and Chen, I think he's going to regress too. But even a guy like Ian Kennedy, I would like that. There's just a lot of good free agents. I would have said Dexter Fowler because I really like Dexter Fowler. I think he's a really underrated player, but he is out of the question now that we got Maven, I'd say. But they definitely need to look at a corner outfield free agents too. They said probably more of a role player. If they don't get Cespedes, I mean, you're kind of looking at guys like David Murphy or Austin Jackson or Marlon Byrd. There's not the outfield isn't as deep. There's kind of a steep drop off. I guess Gerardo Parra is better than any of those guys, but he Scott Kazmir is another good free agent. But there's a drop off in the outfielders, so I think the outfield would probably be like another thing they have to target by trade. I think they could definitely go out and sign like Jeff Samardzija or Jordan Zimmerman or Mike Leake, and then you know a guy further down like Doug Fister or you know I like Doug Fister. I think that's a good fit. Maybe Jay Happ. And then sign a reliever, too. And sign a bunch of... one thing I'd do, my last suggestion, is sign a bunch of, like, relievers that don't have a ton of value. Because, like, last year, Kansas City got rewarded with Ryan Madsen. If you see something you like in a reliever, take a chance, you know? They're going to be cheap, and they're not going to cost you a ton of money. And then you really don't have to... If they don't work out, it's not the end of the world. Like, go get a guy like, you know, like Joe Thatcher, or a guy like Trevor Cahill, or a guy like... Jason Mack, you know, there's a lot of talented relievers out there that didn't have the best year, so definitely a lot to look at.
All right, so my just few things I'd like to see the Tigers do. We still have the option of Tyler Collins and left if we don't bring back Cespedes, but I think he's going to definitely need someone as a platoon, and if the Tigers aren't liking the platoon there, we could go out and get a guy like Gerardo Parra or even... The guy that comes to mind, Nori Aoki. I've heard that name tossed around in a couple interviews, articles I've read, and I think that'd be a good fit. He's hit near 300 the last few years.
Yeah, Tyler Collins would be so valuable as a power bat off the bench. That's so valuable to have late in the game.
Yeah, and then as far as starting pitching, I'd like to see him bring in a guy like Jeff Samardzija, who didn't have the greatest season last year, and I think we could get him at a well. Not so much cheap, but at a reduced value of what maybe he was looking for last offseason. And then I said this, I'm not sure if it was on a podcast, but I definitely remember saying that I'd like to see Doug Fister back in a Tigers uniform as a five starter. That'd be neat. And we got about 5 minutes left. We're just going to run through the other two trades Nick was mentioning earlier.
I'll start us off with our old friend Dave Dombrowski. He's not the GM, he's actually the president. Boston, but you know he's helping make the move. They acquired Craig Kimbrel. It was probably about a week ago now, with from the Padres, and they gave up some pretty good prospects. I think it was a little bit of an overpay, just because Kimbrel's a closer. But at the same time, Kimbrel is one of the better closers of our generation now. I mean, I think he kind of takes Mariano Rivera's spot as like the top closer in baseball if he really can. I mean, he's not quite Mariano Rivera, but. He's really dangerous, really good. I mean, I think his worst season ever, he had like a 2-something ERA. So, I mean, that's a really good, valuable guy to have. And Koji Uehara is not getting any older. They did give up, Manuel Margot, who's a top 25 prospect according to MLB Pipeline. And I think that's a steep price to pay. But he is the best closer, so I can understand Margot. But they also gave up Javier Guerrero, who's the shortstop. And I think that he's a top 100 prospect too, so I think that it's a lot to give up. So it might have been a bit of an overpay, but I think it's an okay move. I think that Dombrowski wants to make sure that nothing bad happens with his bullpen in Boston.
Yeah, so. I think the bullpen, especially nowadays in baseball, it's proven to be a very valuable tool, especially in the back end, because once you get to the...
Yeah, there's so many ways to go about building it too.
Yeah, and honestly... I think Kimbrel and Uehara are probably the second best late inning duo behind the duo they have with Miller and Betances in New York.
Yeah, because Kansas City's missing Greg Holland next year. And then they also gave up Carlos Asaway and Logan Allen, who weren't quite as good. Asaway is a decent prospect, I think. He's kind of a small Venezuelan. He's actually drafted in 2013. He moved here from Venezuela. But he had a really good 2014 season, and last year was his he's 23, and he played at Double-A in the Eastern League, and he had a pretty decent year, too. He looks like he could be a decent infielder. Gets on base a lot, has a little bit of power. Actually had 101 RBIs last year, so he's been pretty impressive so far. So I think the Padres definitely got a good haul, too. So I think it might be one of those deals that could end up helping out both teams in the end. And then the other trade, which was kind of shocking, but basically at this point, I think that the Braves are shedding anybody who is owed anything. They traded away Andrelton Simmons, who's basically, the defensive MVP of baseball. He's probably the best defensive player you could go get in baseball. So, that has a lot of value within itself. His bat was really good a couple years ago, and it's kind of went downhill from there. He had some power, too, and he only hit, like, 4 home runs last year. So his power's disappearing. He wasn't hitting as well. So I think the Braves kind of grew kind of sick of waiting for his bat to come around. But I still think his defensive value is really good. In 2013, he hit 17 homers. And actually, last year, he had the highest on-base percentage of his career besides the 49-game stint he played at the end of 2012. But I think... he's gonna be probably a league average hitter his whole career, but that defense gives him so much value, and especially at a position like shortstop, where there's not a ton of great offensive guys, having the best defensive player is big for the Angels. I don't know that the Angels were necessarily the Angels are a good fit for Simmons, but I don't know if Simmons, I think he'll do fine in Los Angeles, but I'm not sure the Angels spent their prospects, because they had to give up their top 2 prospects. And Sean Newcomb is a stud. He's going to be a number 2 starter, I think, at worst.
He's been great the last couple of years and at the Double-A level.
Yeah, Sean Newcomb. Actually, we went to a card show, and I picked up an autograph of his, because I think it's going to be worth a decent amount one day. So I think that Newcomb is a steep price to pay. And I think that Atlanta got a decent return, even though trading Simmons is a little bit puzzling, because he's signed to a team-friendly deal, too. And, he's kind of a fan favorite, so obviously... sometimes there is business decisions, and I know fans, especially, just your casual fan, doesn't fully understand, everything that goes into it. But I think getting Newcomb really helped, it helped the Braves.
Really helped them settle their minds.
So like I said, that could be another deal that helps both sides. But that one's a little more puzzling for the Braves. So I guess I'll give the Angels the nod for now. But I really do like Newcomb. And then I think he's going to be a stud. And the Angels actually had to give up their 2 top prospects, which the Angels system's actually the worst in baseball by most accounts, even worse than our Tigers. So I think the Braves are really stocking up on guys, though. They have a lot of really good players in their system now at this point. I really like what they're building.
I think
they gave up – Chris Ellis was the other player, too, and I think he can be a 3 or 4 starter, too. I wanted to mention that. He was the number 2 player in their system. He wouldn't be number 2 in any other system, but he's a pretty good player. So.
Is that all we got?
That's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I was just going to mention ways to contact us if you have any questions, comments. We're going to start posting. We're going to edit that website. Hopefully get a couple podcasts out over the holiday season for you guys. Something to listen to if you're traveling, stuff like that. Anyway, on Twitter, we are at NSF Sports Report. Once again, Twitter, NSF Sports Report. Contact us through our mailbag at nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com. And then our website blog type thing is nsfsportsreporters.wordpress.com. Once again, nsfsportsreporters.wordpress.com. 3 ways to contact us. Let us know what you think about the show.
Yeah, we'll probably be on Twitter would be the easiest way to contact us.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm Austin. He's Nick. So if you have a question, comment, concern, anything, you need advice, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, whatever it may be, please specify who your question's for, that kind of stuff. We'd like to end this show by saying thank you for listening and enjoy your week.